recorded live.
Hello, everyone. This is Carl Shinneman, president and founder of Review Less and friend of Juranov. And welcome to another edition of ESI Bytes, where we offer information from national speakers on electronic discovery at a price everyone can afford, which is free, and available when they're interested in listening to it, which is whenever you hit the download button or you subscribe to iTunes and it pops into your iTunes library and you load your device and then later on decide to listen to it. It's all up to the listener. Today we have a real interesting show, and I'm really thrilled to be doing this. We're going to talk about the Georgetown eDiscovery programs. And, you know, the reason why this is sort of a sentimental show for me is back in 2006, I was getting much more involved in electronic discovery nationally. I had very large eDiscovery projects going in Pittsburgh at the time. I think I had the largest project in the country. And I just sold my company to special counsel. And, you know, two things I did right away to be able to build out a national, perspective was I joined the Sedona Conference and I attended the Advanced eDiscovery program at Georgetown. And I got to tell you, attending the latter program was an eye-opening experience. First of all, I met Judge Patriola at the first conference I went to, and some of his comments a few years later formed the basis of the first ESI Bytes podcast I did. I also met Judge Shinlin, who agreed to autograph my bottle of 4C wine, which is based on the Zubalake opinion, and formed the bookend autograph with Laura Zubalake's autograph I'd gotten at a prior conference. The conference, I actually served 4C wine at a wine and cocktail session and gave copies of the board game Discovery Land to Judge Shinlin, Judge Facciola, and Judge Grimm, and developed relationships with them. And then the third time I attended, I'd actually started ESI Bytes, and I realized that half the presenters at Georgetown had done an ESI Bytes podcast, and that made me feel real good. So I'm attending the Georgetown Conference November 17th and 18th coming up for the fourth time, and I got to say, I hold this conference in extremely high regard, and while I'm proud of what we've accomplished with ESI Bytes, borrowing from Johnny Lee Hooker, who's saying, "I will know I've made it when my face is on the cover of the Rolling Stone," or something like that, I could say something similar about establishing a place in eDiscovery as an expert, which happens when you serve on a panel at Georgetown. So, you know, that's my dream. But our guest today, Bob Eisenberg, actually started the program and is going to tell us more about the program and how it started and its future direction. Bob Eisenberg is the Director of eDiscovery Services at Orchitech, LLC, based in New York City and Washington, D.C. He has over 30 years of experience in the practice of law and the rendering of consultative services relating to discovery of electronically stored information, computer forensics, and electronic data preservation and retention. Bob frequently conducts seminars, CLE courses, and other presentations on the subject of eDiscovery, computer forensics, and lifecycle document management. He's the founder and permanent co-chair of the Advanced eDiscovery Institute and eDiscovery Training Academy at the Georgetown University Law Center in Washington, D.C. Bob's also the program chair of Georgetown's Law's eDiscovery Practice Support Symposium and serves upon the advisory board of BNA's Digital Discovery e-Evidence publication, which I should mention, Bob and I were both published in last month's BNA publication with articles about predictive coding. So with that as sort of an intro, Bob, first of all, why don't you start by telling us how you got started in electronic discovery?
Thank you, Carl. And thank you for inviting me on. I've followed your career fairly closely over the years. I've been impressed. I'm particularly impressed with the connection you've made with eDiscovery and wine and alcoholic beverages, because that's something that's important for people who practice eDiscovery. In any case, I've got involved in the eDiscovery world.
Actually, Bob, you're right. I've always said a good sense of humor and a bottle of wine are two of the most useful skills you can have in eDiscovery. But go on.
Right, but that went over like a lead balloon. But okay. It's a tough crowd. I didn't realize that. I practiced law for approximately 15 years, mostly as a litigator. And I became interested in the nexus between computers, computer technology, and the practice of law. Oh, it's about it's over 20 years. It's almost 25 years now. I got involved in litigation support at a time where there was essentially no e-discovery, as we know. I mean, absolutely no e-discovery. And I've been involved since then. Sometime in about fairly early on, in terms of the world of electronic discovery, I left traditional litigation support. I guess it was 98, 99, and devoted myself almost entirely to e-discovery at that time.
Okay, so let's start at the beginning with Georgetown. First of all, why don't you tell us a little bit about the various conferences that Georgetown now offers, and then tell us how it got started.
Okay. First of all, as you know, Carl, Georgetown, the Advanced E-Discovery Institute, which was the original program and is still going strong, we're going into our eighth year. Our next 2 day is coming up in just 2 weeks, November 17th and 18th. That program and all the Georgetown programs are very much a collaborative effort. I have been the best thing for me in terms of my involvement has been the connection with the best and the brightest in the industry. I don't say that gratuitously, and it's been for me a wonderful opportunity to work and meet with some incredibly capable and knowledgeable people that have really shaped the discipline of e-discovery. And of course, it's very much a collaborative effort with obviously our host, Georgetown Law Center, and in particular Dean Larry Center. So this certainly wasn't as you can imagine, this was never a one-man effort. But I was privileged early on to be able to go to the Law Center. This was in about 2002, and meet with Dean Center at that time. I happened to be part of the original group that established the Stoner Working Group on Electronic Discovery. And I thought that we still needed a CLE in this area. I was doing some CLEs for Georgetown Law at the time, but I went to Dean Center and I suggested that we do a more elaborate 2 day CLE and bring in people who were at the time, and still are many of them, the acknowledged leaders in the field. It happens to be that the advisory board we put together, which eventually was the core of the faculty, is the original, by and large, and I'm going to maybe surprise some of my colleagues here who may not realize it, the original Sedona Working Group, the people who met in Arizona at that time, made up the original advisory board of the Georgetown program. And the idea was sort of there was a general feeling that the Georgetown program would become the CLE arm of Sedona. And we were associated, we're still associated with Sedona over the years, sometimes more closely than other times. The thought being that Sedona would be the think tank, the policy group, and the CLE arm, the organization that takes those concepts, those standards, and trains people in the use of that, would be Georgetown. So that was the connection between Sedona and Georgetown. Now, that program, again, it has been, and I've been, again, very privileged to be involved in it. It is just been wonderful. It's been tremendously successful, as you know. We are sold out. We have been, I think, for the last 5 or 6 years, maybe 5 years. We're now sold out of the 2 day that's coming up in 2 weeks. But we've also had the opportunity to establish some other programs, to create some other very original, very, I would say, unique programs. Our thought was that we had a CLE, which is the 800-pound grill of CLEs, but what we wanted to do was set up a training academy. And there's a very distinct difference between training, a training academy, and a CLE program. And the difference, I think, is encapsulated, and this is oversimplifying to some extent, in the idea that a CLE has, again, the most astute and most experienced people talking about essentially what they want to speak about, which is very, very important, and telling it, a lot of that information is given in the course of background information, war stories. Again, very, very important. I'm not diminishing that at all. But that is more the CLE methodology. A training program, as we've established at Georgetown, we have a one-week program entitled the eDiscovery Training Academy, does not speak to the issue of what people want to, what the presenters want to present, but what people need to know in terms of hands-on, the practical practice of e-discovery. So we decided, and we're now going into our third year, to set up an academy which is not unlike NITA for litigators, that the National Institute of Trial Advocacy. It is a very intense immersion in e-discovery. It is a very small group. We limit that class to 50 individuals, and they go through a week, which I know the term boot camp is bandied about. This is really a boot camp. It's very intense. People do hands-on work. They sit with their computers and learn about forensics and computer networks that you can't hide behind at the back of the class here. You have to participate. People throw themselves into this effort. We have a regular faculty rather than a rotating CLE faculty. And we are very privileged to have this last session, and we'll continue with this, hopefully, if we're lucky, two of the premier experts in the field of e-discovery in the federal judiciary, and that's Judges Batchel and Grimm, who teach the legal portion of the academy, and has, in fact, stayed through the whole session to answer questions and to remark on what was being presented. So that is a very unusual program, which also has been very successful.
So Bob, we've done some shows on education and e-discovery, and I'm personally the view that there's no such thing as horrible e-discovery education, but there are different levels of depth you go into. So you've got some online courses that are out there that'll give you tests at the end and show some basic knowledge. You're actually requiring people. There's no hiding in your advanced workshop. You're hands-on and being graded.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
All right. So that's how many graduates do you produce every year on that?
We've had two classes every year, and there's approximately 100 to 120 individuals that go through the program. And we get wonderful kudos, but we warn people coming in when they register. We tell them, you have to stay. We've had people come to us because it's a one-week program. We've had litigators, senior partners of firms asking that they have some of their people that they break up the full course and have different attorneys attend different programs, and we refuse. That's not the way the program is to be conducted. You have to sit through the entire program.
You don't see a lot of Wall Street Journals open during the classes.
No, you don't. Especially since the judges are present. Absolutely. You don't.
So, what in your mind makes Georgetown so successful?
Let me discuss the third program before
okay.
I forget. There's,
right.
there's another program, which is, excuse the promotion or, the...
No, that's fine. We're talking about it. That's the subject of the show.
Right. Understood. But this program is... just a few days away, as a matter of fact, coincidentally. This is a program specifically on e-discovery practice support. It is a very unusual program. We decided that this was an area that we wanted to focus on. We focus on every other aspect of the discipline of e-discovery. So we've created this symposium, which we hope to be a precursor to a distance learning course that is online program. And it's specifically on e-discovery practice support, but it's unusual from the point of view that it is role-based or career-based. There are three separate tracks that you can follow. You can stay with one track, or you can go from track to track, and that covers the more or less the entire range of the occupations that make up e-discovery practice support. There's a technical analyst track, which is an introductory track, which is the first phase of someone going into the profession. There's a project management track, which is very, how important that's become
yep.
in our world. And then there's a third track for department head or department director. It is brand new, and we're doing a full day Friday at the law school. But I have to.
So you did listen to that the comments from the law firms. We'd like to break it up, and it sounds like that's your response. Not everyone can be the superstar. You're going to have different roles.
That's right. But let me. The symposium is geared to practice support people. Although we will have attorneys, some attorneys are registered, or people with JDs who are interested in the practice support field. But the problem here is that we have not been able to, not surprisingly, in this financial situation, garner support from many law firms. They have not provided budget money to send people to this program. The budget money is there for CLEs, primarily because, as you know, many jurisdictions make it mandatory, but it has not been made available for the 11-4 symposium. So it has been a struggle, but we have reached critical mass. And we eventually did have a number of very prominent law firms, and we're very, very grateful for this, come forward and realize that there should be money put into this effort at all as well. And my position has been from the very beginning, and that's why I wanted to see this program go forward, it's unique and it's very important. And I believe that law firms have both a professional and moral obligation to provide funding for the education and vision of the future that this symposium will provide. And we've been able to bring some firms to understand that. Again, the program is unique. The program not only will train people in discipline, but it gives attendees a vision of what the future can be, the position and status they may be able to attain as they pursue the profession. And the program is intended to professionalize and standardize the discipline of practice support. I don't think I could understate how important this area has become in terms of litigation practice with ESI heavy matters. And I think we're going to get the traction. I think this is going to become the place that you'll want to go to really understand and be trained and to turn into a profession of e-discovery practice support.
Yeah, I think you got to get online to get everyone to you know, which I think you recognize. It's easier to log in than it is to fly in. How do you? I mean, you've got these different programs. How do you select your faculty, your speakers?
Well, this is.
I understand year one, Sedona, but you know, going forward.
I don't. Without braggadocio, because again, to say that this is a collaborative or communal effort is to understate it. We've had so many wonderful people involved in this program. I think that what I brought to this, my strong suit, is the ability to find or understand who has the capacity to teach and who has the passion and who sees this world as much an art as a science. That, again, with all due modesty, that has been my strong suit here. And what I'm very proud about, what I really, really find delightful, is that there's some of the individuals that have come through this were not, they were very proficient, but were not what you would call experts or recognized individuals in the field. And they since have become so. So it's been very, very gratifying. How do we select? We look for people who are really the standouts in the field. It's sometimes litigators. Interestingly enough, we've had people over the almost decade who have stood out as being the trial counsel in matters that had very, very seminal, that turned to seminal e-discovery matters, and they really were not good as presenters, or they didn't even have that much of a foundation e-discovery. But in many cases, they do, so we look for litigators. But we look for people who speak on the subject because they have the passion, and they're the ones who are caught up in it. The problem is, to some extent, that we're always looking for new faces. It's very important, to some extent, to make sure you leave yourself open. There's so many talented people involved with Georgetown at this time. We have to look closely and realize that we have to go out and find some of the talent that has not had the forum of Georgetown or Masters or one of the other conferences.
Yeah, we face the same battle at ESI Bites. I'm always looking for people that are off the beaten path, so but who deliver value. And sometimes you get it right, and sometimes you don't. You hope that you get it right the vast majority of the time.
Well, we've become very, I have to say, we've been very polished. We're now looking at, there's so much on YouTube, and there's so many videos, so much out there,
yeah,
that we do now look at, we're able to see how people look and sound, not look, but sound, and how they handle these presentations. So we don't go in blind very often.
So you talked about the symposium. Let's talk about the Advanced eDiscovery conference coming up on November 17th and 18th. What are you excited about with this year's conference?
Well, we've had some original, I think unique sessions, which is hard to do in our universe, as you know, Carl. There's so much out there, but we attempt, and we've attempted successfully to provide these sessions, an education in aspects of the industry that you normally would not encounter in other conferences. For instance, coming up in 2 weeks, we have a session on statistics and sampling for lawyers and how to apply a well-accepted methodology in the world of e-discovery. Sounds very intimidating, but we have a group that's going to make it very, very, and I've been involved in planning this session and most of the sessions, very accessible, and that's chaired by Magistrate Francis, as a matter of fact. And that session will provide an overview of basic statistical reasoning that can be applied in the e-discovery context to help tackle voluminous and complex sets of data and streamline that in a cost-effective manner. We know how important that is. It's unusual to find something like that.
Confidence interval does not equal confidence level.
Right.
Okay.
We also have a Behind the Black Box, Decoding Advanced eDiscovery Analytic Technology, and we're going to be talking about predictive coding there, but also an unusual session, and we have many top-notch people and some technologists sitting on that panel. And then we have something which is very difficult to find, other than in my eDiscovery Practice Support Symposium. We have a session entitled, Who's Really in Charge? Best Practices of eDiscovery Project Management, which we know how important that is. But we also run the gamut. We have cross-border sessions. We have sessions on preservation. We have very, very important now proportionality. But the one that brings brings many people, I would say now people come for the entire program and the wonderful networking opportunities that it provides. But the session that people find particularly interesting is our signature session, which is our judicial roundtable, where you're able to see, in this case, I think we have, looking at the brochure, we have eight or nine of the premier e-discovery judges in the judiciary. And that, not only can you hear them speak about topics you will not hear if you're in a courtroom or from the bench, but you'll be able to ask questions, and that's become our signature panel.
So, you know, for people that have gotten shut out, are there options to get the material? And the second question is, what about next year? I mean, when should you start thinking about signing up for this so you don't get shut out?
Yeah, it's the most amazing thing and gratifying thing. People register almost immediately. There are people that immediately after this closes, after 5 o'clock on the second day, people are registering for the next session. You can purchase the course material. There's no online component to this right now. I'm actually not sure whether this is going to be recorded or not, but the course material is available. It is closed down, as you know. We try to make certain that we don't have a place overcrowded. But my advice, it's kind of self-evident. My advice is that you register as soon as possible.
Okay. So the final question I just started asking on the last podcast I did, everyone always says they love the first question of what got you started in e-discovery. Well, you got to keep reinventing yourself, Bob, as you know. So the last question is I hope the new one is what do you see is the big hot issue right now at this point in electronic discovery, you know, here November 1st, 2011, going forward?
Yeah. This is not going to surprise you, Carl, but I think it's defensibility. And in my opinion, the courts are actually returning to one of the fundamental tenets of litigation practice, which is defensibility. And with the voluminous CSI, which is often grounded in what we know as novel technology, including predictive coding, litigants must be able to defend how they identified sources of data and preserved, harvested, and filtered that data, as well as the basis for having the data admitted into evidence. Despite the fact that certain baseline e-discovery standards are well established, look at Zuba Lake, the field continues to develop at a rapid pace, especially as volume grows exponentially and businesses and people move to digital platforms and technology advances exponentially. Everything's moving like a bat out of hell. And defensibility becomes more and more important. As far as predictive coding, which is a very promising change in the technology landscape and is becoming rapidly viewed, I think, as an accepted approach, predictive coding is a case in point. The critical need to be able to defend the defensibility of a technology that is, I believe, becoming crucial to the discipline of e-discovery. And in particular, our favorite rule, Rule 1 of the federal rules, which mandate that the rules should provide a secure, just, speedy, and inexpensive determination of every action and proceeding. Predictive coding, that technology, concepts are clustering, that goes to the very heart of that. Defending that, as we know, is critical, and it's problematic, and it's what has to be looked at. And as we know, in the case of particularly federal magistrates, Peck and Grimm, Facciola, and others, there's a trend to indicate, some more overtly than others, that the use of this technology, like predictive coding, is an accepted way of conducting a search in appropriate civil litigation, although, to my knowledge, there's no specific decisional law on the subject.
Yeah, no, I agree completely on that. And I think defensibility goes beyond predictive coding. I think we've ignored defensibility in the entire process. So whatever, you know, you're doing, be it linear review and you know, or trying to just do some smart review with clustering or email threading, you know, an eye to what you gathered, what you missed, what you produced, defending it is always a good thing. And the more we measure, the more it becomes easier to decide what are the best ways to do things. And, you know, I asked that question to Judge Waxy at the last program we did on Meet and Confers, and he said education of lawyers on technology. So I think you've got some shared views on that, although I would add that at the conference I was just at in Philadelphia at IQPC, I asked the judges about using these types of tools, and a state court judge basically said analytics in his lifetime, probably not in his courtroom. So that's why we have a lot of work to do to try to get the word out on how these things work so that people are more comfortable. I think you nailed a good one. So, Bob, I really appreciate having you on the show. It's been long overdue, and you know, it's always a pleasure to have you and other experts like you share your knowledge with us and our listeners, and hopefully we'll be able to do some more shows with you later this year.
Thank you so much.
And I'd also like to thank our sponsor, Jurnov, for their continued support of ESI Bytes. And to the listeners, if you've enjoyed this podcast, I'd encourage you to go to www.esibytes.com with a Y for a complete list of our show. It sounds out as phonetically as Easy Bytes of ESI information. So, however you choose to remember us, come to ESI Bytes to learn more about eDiscovery before ESI bites you back. This is Carl Shinneman, President and Founder of ReviewLess, wishing you a nice day.